So today we're continuing this series out of the little letter of James, the very first letter that is written, that has been collected, that we call the New Testament. So it is the oldest of the New Testament writings, and it gives to us a Proverbs type feel, the way it reads, and it gives to us some specific things to keep in mind, and I am calling them 12 wisdom coins that we are to collect, vintage mintage. Wisdom is something that comes with experience. Wisdom comes through learning, through life's ups and downs. And what we find is James looks back upon his own time with Jesus, and I think the inspiration of many of his thoughts come from the Sermon on the Mount. And if we really wanted to extend this particular series, we could probably do a side-by-side comparison between the teachings of Jesus and the letter of James. But what we are doing here today is we're looking at 12 wisdom coins, and we've talked a little bit about favoritism versus love, genuine faith, and today we're going to talk about the tongue. So here's where we've been. I've chosen different coins as symbols of what that wisdom coin is speaking to. And the first one was, everybody belongs. James chapter 2, verse 1 says, my brothers and sisters, believers in our Lord Jesus Christ, must not show favoritism. Everybody belongs. Doesn't matter where we come from or what we look like, where we are on the social status. So James says to his readers, accept one another, love one another, serve one another, because everybody belongs. Secondly, we talked a little bit about everybody believes, but belief is a strange thing. You can be a believer in certain things, and yet it pays no attention to your practical life. You believe only in your head. But what James tells us, sort of like Benjamin Franklin, he was a very practical individual, and he was an individual that says that it must work. These things that we believe must show itself in daily life. And that's what James says when he says in 2:14, what good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such a faith save them? Now, what he's talking about is the proving of our faith being genuine is not just what we believe in our heads, but it is also what we do with our hands. Now, today I've chosen this Eisenhower silver dollar. This comes from 1971, and there is a reason that I've chosen this coin as our symbol for today. So James chapter 3, verse 5, as we read a little bit earlier, says, likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Now, you say, what does that have to do with Eisenhower? It's not what is on the front of the coin that's the symbol. It's what's on the back of the coin. If you ever notice the back of this coin, it is celebrating the 1969 landing on the moon. You'll see here on the back of the coin, there is the moon underneath the eagle. Now, I want us to think about the first moon landing. And I want us to think about Apollo 11 landing on July the 20th, 1969. And this mission was historic, obviously. We put men up in space, but we never had an individual walk on the moon. And I know Walter Cronkite, he was really celebrating and boasting this great achievement that for the very first time a man walked on the moon, and that was Neil Armstrong. And I bet all of us remember what he said. That's one small step for man and one giant leap for mankind. And that statement became iconic, didn't it? We still remember it all these years later. But I think we fail to remember this, that while we are boasting of human ingenuity, and while we are boasting of exploration, really what was behind the landing on the moon was who was going to have bragging rights to put the first man on the moon, because there was this competition that was going on between the United States and Russia. And Russia was able to put Sputnik up in space, and they seem to be ahead of us in the space program until this occurred on July 20th, 1969. And the first moon landing not only was boasting of human ingenuity and boasting of the ability to do what no man has done before, but it was also a form of competition that was in the middle of the Cold War, where the strife was going on between these two countries. And so what should be celebrated by all mankind probably was not celebrated in Russia in 1969 because we beat them to the moon. And what James is telling us in this paragraph is not that boasting is wrong all the time, but it can produce some problems some of the time if it is not motivated correctly. And so as we come to this paragraph today, I want us to think about the backside of this silver dollar. We boast of man's ingenuity and their ability to explore space, the ability to go to the moon and to step on the moon, but also behind that was a lot of politics. Behind that was a lot of histrionics. A lot of that was who has bragging rights. Who is better than the other? Okay, keep that in the back of your mind, right? So we come here and we are reminded that everybody boasts. We might boast about our family or our job or some achievement. The Cleveland Marathon going on, they can boast about being able to finish the race, right? And none of these things are wrong. None of these things are something that are to be disregarded, but what often happens is what comes with it, the attitudes that come with it. And so boasting can either be helpful or hurtful. And James talks about the power of the tongue several times in this letter. In chapter 1, we're told what he said, and it was kind of a preview of what he was doing in this paragraph. He says, those who consider themselves religious and yet do not keep a tight rein on their tongues deceive themselves, and their religion is worthless. Fascinating. If we can't bridle the tongue, and if it is set loose, it can do all kinds of damage to other people. And in that case, your religion is not helpful, but it is hurtful. So in this paragraph, he says, hey, we all make mistakes in verse 2. We all do. None of us are perfect with how we use our language. None of us are perfect with how we use our tongue. Sometimes there's innuendo, right? That we say the right thing, but we say it in such a way that people can misread it. Or people can pick up on the vibe by the way we say something. And so James is saying we all make mistakes. And believe me, we can make them multiple times a day. Sociologists tell us that the average person speaks 16,000 words a day. That's a lot of potential mistakes that can be made with how we use our tongue. But I also know that it's far more important than how many words we're using. What's more important is how are we using the words we are using. So James has touched upon this, and I just read chapter 1, verse 26. And then he says in verse 1 here, which is quite interesting, not many of you should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. A teacher. Now, in the first century world, the equivalent of a teacher is a rabbi, okay? Jesus was often called rabbi, right? Teacher. What do you think about this? Teacher, what about that? And I think what James is getting at here is more than a profession of being a teacher. it is someone that has a position of authority, someone that's looked up to, that has some type of influence upon those that are listening. So that could be a teacher, obviously. It could be a political leader. It could be a pastor, a priest, or a rabbi. It could be a variety of different types of people in society that are communicating a message in some way, and people are looking to them for insight or inspiration. And what we find is that those individuals especially have to be careful about how they use their voice, how they use their tongue, how they use their language, because it is influencing other people. So when James starts off and he says, hey, not too many of you should become these type of people that are rabbis or scribes or teachers or those type of things, because God's holding you responsible for the way you're using your language and the impact it is having upon someone else. Now, the way he's going to illustrate it is quite remarkable. So when I was reading that paragraph a moment ago, there were six different images that he uses to talk about the power of the tongue. So he says, first of all, that the tongue, although it is small, I think this is the point. The tongue is probably one of the smallest parts of our body, but it can do the most damage. More than our legs and our feet and our arms and our hands, our tongue can do great things or it can do disastrous things depending upon how we use it. And he first says, hey, think about a horse, this powerful creature. This horse needs to be tamed. And one of the things that people do is they put a bit and a bridle on a horse. And all of a sudden, this wild beast can be tamed. It can be brought to a point where it can be trained. It can be subdued. Now, not all horses are alike. There are some horses that are almost impossible to train. But for most of them, this small little thing, this bit, this bridle, is able to tame a horse. But he says here, in contrast, listen to what he says, when we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. But the implication is that even though you can put a bit and bridle in a horse and they become tame, it is so much harder to tame a human being because they have this small little piece in their mouth too, called the tongue, and it can be used for dramatic things. Then he says, a rudder of a ship. Okay, how many of you saw the news feed from yesterday, a Mexican tall ship that slammed in, or at least the mast did, into the Brooklyn Bridge, right? And they think of it as mechanical problems and so forth. That ship, as big as it is controlled by a rudder on the back of it to steer it one way or another. Think about that for a moment. You can have a tall ship, a massive ship, and which way it goes, left or right, depends upon this small little thing, the rudder in the back. He then says, hey, it only takes a spark to get a fire going, right? All it takes is a small little thing. And he says the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. And consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. Well, they finally rebuilt those condos over on Menor Avenue in Willoughby after that massive fire. Remember a couple of years ago? And it was set by a small spark. They think they left the heating in a room kind of drying out the drywall, and somehow one little spark set that whole thing ablaze, and there was multiple fire departments that came and could not save it. Think about the negligence of campers that might leave a campfire going and then the wind picks up and blows a spark somewhere, and all of a sudden you have wildfires that make it hard to contain. So James is using all of these metaphors to illustrate. Now, here's an interesting one. He says, why does he say this? He says, all kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by mankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. It is full of deadly poison. He seems to be reaching back to the book of Genesis. He seems to be talking about the domain of mankind to be able to partner with God in governing creation and all of the creatures that God brought into the existence. But the one untamable beast is this little thing in my mouth that you just can't get control of. How about number five, a poisonous spring? He talks about fresh water and salt water and how the salt water can ruin the fresh water, right? And then lastly, he talks about a fruit tree, and he talks about bearing good fruit versus bad fruit. And all of it is related to the tongue and the potential of what can happen when we do not allow it to be tamed and governed by God. What happens when we make great boasts with bad motives? Well, it can set a forest on fire. It can steer a ship to hit the Brooklyn Bridge. It can do all kinds of things that bring about great damage. So what do we do about that? There's two things I think that we can do about it, is understand why we do it. So look at Proverbs 18:21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. Sounds kind of like James, doesn't it? Good fruit, bad fruit, right? But what we find is the question, why do we boast in the first place? What is it that motivates us to do that? Well, there probably is a wide variety of different things, and those that are trained in psychology and counseling and other types of fields like that probably can answer this question far better than I can. But I think there's several reasons. Maybe we make a boast to gain approval by someone we want to impress, or maybe we're trying to cover our insecurities by boasting about something because we really don't feel all that good about ourselves, or maybe we're trying to show superiority over someone else. We're better than, we're more important than, or maybe we're just trying to fill a void. Maybe we're not happy. Maybe we're trying to boast to convince ourselves, right, that we've done something significant with our lives, or maybe we're just trying to influence or manipulate someone else to do our bidding. Boy, the tongue has a lot of potential to it. And I think what we need to do, secondly, is have two principles that might help us to get this thing under control. First of all, think first, okay? Before you talk, think. Well, here's a good acrostic, okay? Think. T-H-I-N-K. Is it true? Is what we are saying accurate? Is it reality? Is it something that represents honestly things that are going on around us? Secondly, is it helpful? Or is it going to be hurtful to someone else? If I say this as much as I want to, because I would just love to give those people a piece of my mind, right? And yet at the same time, what's going to be the result of that? Thirdly, is it inspiring? You see, the potential of the tongue is not just destruction, but it is creation. What can it create if we use language that lifts people up rather than tearing them down? Number four, is it necessary? Is what I am about to say necessary? Or is it just superlatives? Is it just something that I want to say because I want to get it out? And then finally, number five, is it kind? Have you noticed we live in an angry age? And all you got to do is listen, and most people don't have a whole lot of kind things to say. They got a lot of criticisms. They got a lot of judgments, but not a lot of kind things. So true, helpful, inspiring, necessary, kind. Think first. Secondly, talk less. Think first, talk less. Listen to Psalm 39, verse 1. I will guard my ways that I may not sin with my tongue. I will guard my mouth with a muzzle. You know, one of those things that gets out of control is what builds up inside of us comes out in a destructive way. And the psalmist says, I'm going to guard my way. And then he uses another image. I'm going to put a muzzle on my mouth so I don't say things that it's going to be damaging. Proverbs 4:23, watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. Our tongue is not really the problem. The tongue is a mirror of what's in the heart. So when we think about the things that we say, there's usually a heart problem first. Maybe there's some heart surgery that needs to take place. Boy, is that a disturbing picture or what? The barbs that are on the tongue. James 3:1 reminds us, not many of you should become teachers. But what if we put that into modern parlance? What if we said, not many of you should become leaders. Not many of you should become political figures. Not many of you should become civil and religious authorities. Think twice about that. Why? Because you know that we who teach, lead, politicize, or manipulate in some way will be judged more strictly. Jesus really had it out at times with the Pharisees, and he called them blind leading the blind, right? There are vulnerable people that were sheep underneath the influence of the Pharisees, and they were leading them in ways to benefit themselves rather than boast about God, going back to Jeremiah's passage. If we're going to boast about something, let us boast about the Lord our God. So let's be careful of our barbed comments. Let's be careful of those things that tend to overtake us and just how damaging it can be. I ran across this little soliloquy here called Tongue of Thorns. Listen to how powerful this is. She walks where silence curdles slow, through halls where truths are feared to grow. No herald's call, no trumpet's sound, just footsteps soft on poisoned ground. Her lips are red with wounds well kept, her tongue a vine where thorns have crept. She speaks and petals fall like snow, but every bloom bears rot below. She comes when lies have nested deep, where secrets fester in their sleep. No kindness hides behind her grace. She peels the mask from every face. The tongue that torments does not shout. It whispers what we dream about. The words we swallow, bitter, bare, she sets them loose into the air. She is no demon, no delight, but justice wrapped in ragged light, a mirror made of broken breath, a song that shivers close to death. And those who hear her never rest. They carry thorns inside their chest. For once she speaks, the truth remains, a bloom of blood beneath the veins. Well, that's pretty powerful poetry there, to think about the potential of the tongue. So, leaders, be careful. Leaders, know the dangers. Now, what happens? Let's go back here for a moment to the backside of Eisenhower's silver dollar. Is it okay to boast about going to the moon? Yes. Is it good to use that boasting as a way of international conflict? No, that's bad. You see, sometimes the danger of political boasting, and it's around us all the time, it doesn't have to be with other countries, it can be within our own political parties. But number one is escalation of tensions, boasting about things like military strength, economic dominance, geopolitical influence can provoke rival nations in competition. The greatest nation on the face of the earth, okay. Anytime there's that type of language, you go, the world is a lot more complex than you want to understand it to be. Secondly, loss of credibility. You know, when there is this bravado, a boasting, you can't take someone seriously, right? Because you go, they're just boasting about something to make themselves look good or elevate themselves in some way, and there's a loss of credibility. And in the case of international situations become less willing to honor their commitments because you don't know whether the other person is what? Telling the truth or not, right? Number three, undermining global cooperation. It can fracture mutual respect and collective solutions. There's a lot of problems collectively in the human race. Poverty, hunger, climate change, resources. And one big, bold country can't determine it for everybody. It's a collective problem and needs a collective solution. Number four, sometimes this type of language can empower extremism and authoritarianism, and these leaders can justify just about anything in their domestic policies, and they project it under the guise of strength when, in all actuality, it's a way of manipulating what they want. So what do we do with this? Well, let's come back to another picture. So, 1969, something happens. The United States goes up and walks on the moon, and Neil Armstrong says this iconic statement. But it really is 1975 that is interesting. And it really displays the contrast between histrionics and hope. During the space race between the U.S. and USSR, you know, countries engaged in theatrical displays of technological prowess for global prestige. However, in 1975, there was a mutual mission into space. The Apollo, Soyuz, I think that's the way it's pronounced, test project in 75 marked a shift towards cooperation, with the U.S. and USSR joining forces on a joint mission, signaling a potential end to the highly competitive space race. And it was there that their spacecraft and our spacecraft came together. Think about the technological feat that happened. That a spacecraft made by the Russians and a spacecraft made by the United States would somehow, even to get the measurements right, to bring these two units together where they connect. And I think, as I say in these smaller letters here, that the true testament that these two big world powers could collaborate and be productive together and even set their differences aside to boast in, this is what mankind can do when we work together. Amazing, right? Amazing thing that happened. Well, as we come to an end in our learning today, just a couple more quick things I want to tell you. Proverbs 27, verse 2. Let another praise you, and not your own mouth, a stranger, and not your own lips. It's not so much my tongue that matters. in trying to seek attention. No, no, shut up. Think first, talk less, right? Okay? But other people, what do they bring to the table? Allow them to express themselves. Lord, put a guard on my mouth and help me to be a cooperative individual, because this little thing called the tongue has such great power. Help me to use it to edify, to uplift and help other people, not to bring them down or destroy them in any way. Would you stand with me as we close? I'd like to close with this little quote here. Silence is the fence around wisdom, a quiet guard that holds it tight. In stillness, truths grow deep within, unspoiled by noise or reckless flight. Words like rivers may run wild, but silence builds a sacred space where wisdom blooms serene and mild, protected by its calm embrace. This is a wisdom coin worth collecting. It will serve us well through the rest of our life. Amen. Have a great week, everybody.